Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen. It's good to be here on this auspicious day in November 2019.
Yes. So that's the interesting thing. I mean, Blade Runner, the 82 film, was set in 2019. And in many ways, it can be seen prophetic. So it got some things right and some things wrong. Do you want to tell us what areas do you think that Blade Runner best represented the way that, you know, we've evolved or devolved in the last couple of decades?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, we can look at it and think, what are the things got right? What are the things got wrong? I don't think it was intended to be a prophetic work. And that sort of comes through in the design of it, the retrofuturism, which was obviously an attack on the idea of progress, that we're going to have a Star Trek future where everything is going to be high tech and so forth. So even though the film is looking ahead almost 40 years from 82, it's also looking back 40 years to film noir. And in fact, the scriptwriter Hampton Fancher said he imagined Robert Mitchum playing the role which Harrison Ford eventually got. Okay, so in terms of this notion of street markets and giant billboards and so forth, that sort of congested urban ghettoization
What's fascinating is I went to Jakarta at the beginning of the year, and I arrived evening, late night, and just on the taxi drive, I just thought this was almost like Blade Runner, just the density of the population, the colourful billboards, just the sort of overwhelming sort of sensuousness of the actual location. And I thought how much that seemed to locate into that idea of the sort of modern city, of being that sort of concentration of just such an enormity of activity.
Yeah, definitely. Except Ridley Scott, like a lot of people in the early 80s, thought that the 21st century was going to be Japanese. Japanese influence was going to be pervasive and so forth. And in fact, schools in New South Wales, in Australia, started teaching Japanese, because if you're going to do business, this is what you need to learn. You know, forget French, Italian, German. It's got to be Japanese. In that sense, he got it wrong. However, I was in Shanghai a couple of years ago and I thought, yeah, this is the Blade Runner city, okay? If 21st century is the Chinese century, then Shanghai is really where Blade Runner's sort of, you know, spiritual analog, if you like.
So, I mean, what's also interesting is Philip K.'s novels, which this book is based upon, often dealing with consumerism and corporate power. Now, within the book, you have the overarching Tyrrell Corporation in these great, massive Gothic building. Do you think that it was also looking at this human exhaustionness of endless drive for economic gain?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that there is no apparent government. The novel alludes to government, but we don't see politicians, for example, in Blade Runner. We see corporate types, right? We see Tyrrell, the creator and the owner of the IP that runs the replicants. So in that sense, I mean, score a big one to Scott and to Fancher, the scriptwriter, for predicting that corporatization of the world, where even governments kind of become secondary, if you like.
And you also have a sort of reflection on, I thought, globalization, of this idea of the off-world colonies. I thought that kind of had a fascinating sort of resonance. I mean, even back then, that sort of idea of conception of what the West is, a sort of sense of exhaustion, and the fact that everyone is actually leaving what would be the center to the actual power is now within the periphery.
So yeah, I guess the word that you're sort of alluding to here, which isn't actually mentioned in the film, is entropy, right? That things are running down, and that if there is going to be a brave new world, a brave new future, it's going to be on another planet. It's certainly not going to be on Earth, and certainly not in 21st century Los Angeles.
So H.G. Wells famously sort of would predict the highways, and if you go through sort of the history of science fiction, it's always interesting to work out what particular works actually do find things right. What would you say are areas where it opened up possibilities that when we sort of imagine ourselves over the last few decades, that it has really sort of encapsulated?
Well, it's interesting because in one sense, and I mean, this sounds, you know, totally counterintuitive, but in one sense, Blade Runner is a film about slavery, but you never see African-Americans there. So in a sense, you see plenty of Asian characters in the background. So in that sense, he sort of gets it right, the increasing Asiatic influence, which was obviously apparent there in 1982. But we don't see African-Americans in downtown Los Angeles, which, you know, is obviously going against the whole thing. But if we read the replicants as the sort of analog for slavery, for slaves and so forth, they are the blacks of the film, I guess you could say. And when Roy Batty says in the climactic scene, what's it like, Blade Runner, to live in fear, right? This is what it's like to live as a slave. And then you suddenly realize that, okay, this superhuman, more than human character has been used and abused and understands that whole slave mentality, you know, which is such an important part of American history.
And with the director's cut, that then becomes even more circular of, you know, when we realize that Deckard himself has the idea he's also similarly a replicant, that as much as he's the hunting of the system, he's actually part of attacking his own sense of agency.
Exactly. And I mean, that's sort of almost the starting point for the sequel, Blade Runner
2049.
where in the novel, another bounty hunter, they don't call them Blade Runners in the novel, of course, another bounty hunter says to Deckard, or Deckard says to him, we should get androids killing androids, right? You know, it's dirty work, and if you start to question the morality of it, then you're lost, basically. So, yeah, and in the sequel, effectively, we do have replicants hunting and killing replicants. But then that replicant starts to question his identity and are his memories real and so forth.
Also, Blade Runner reflecting a lot on the use of technology, and I was thinking particularly the use of technology within a sort of authoritarian system. And I was thinking a little bit about how the hunting of replicants reminds me somewhat of the way that the Chinese government is using smartphones to sort of monitor the Uyghur community. Do you think that there has sort of references in the way that technology would be deployed? That there was not going to be a utopian.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a theme in science fiction more broadly, is that technology, it's always a trade-off, right? Yes, it gives us things. It gives us, you know, more leisure time. It's more convenient and so forth. But there's also always something that we have to give in return for that. So yeah, there is no perfect technology, I could say. I think Blade Runner comes down on the negative side, that technology is really more of the problem than it is the solution. And in that regard, some of the things it imagines, like flying cars, for example, are not really part of our future. That seems to be off the agenda.
That kind of thing with climate change and emissions, like the sort of Jetsons dream of this sort of perfectly automated existence where we can basically live a sort of leisured existence.
Well, I think the more immediate problem is if you're looking at alternative fuels, then an electric flying car is going to be so much harder to produce than an electric car, because you've got to actually get it off the ground. And there was always a problem with electric cars, with the batteries and making them compact enough and so forth. Having said that, there's a Slovakian company called Aeromobile is supposedly releasing an air car in 2020. And you can find it on the internet. It's got wings. It's got a propeller. It doesn't look anything like the spinners that we see in the two Blade Runner films. So it's more like a plane that you could possibly take on the ground rather than, you know, a car which launches into the air. And in fact, while we're on this, Elon Musk's latest creation, the Cybertruck, doesn't fly, but it looks like something straight out of Blade Runner, you know, with its very angular and futuristic
and
design.
Also, obviously, there's also the idea about automation and the sort of querying of that, and we've sort of got the idea of artificial intelligence, which we're kind of exploring at the moment, is the sort of, what are the boundaries with this? I mean, we've certainly seen governments using algorithms in ways which would deny quite individuals' sense of agency. And I think even in the film, you have a certain questions about how is artificial intelligence going to be deployed?
Yeah, well, I mean, there seems to be a sort of a fundamental disagreement between scientists and philosophers. So from a scientific point of view, and this is something that Stephen Hawking said not long before he died, that fully functioning, robotic, human-like entities are not that far away. You talk to a philosopher will say, well, yeah, we can map neurons and, you know, we have a greater understanding of the brain and of the genome than we ever had, but what is consciousness? We still don't know what consciousness is. If we don't know what consciousness is, how can we possibly manufacture it? So in that sense, it's still a dream, if you like, that the replicant ideal of, or the replicant model of creature, you know, not like Frankenstein. Frankenstein could be seen as the first AI novel as well as the first science fiction novel, that is then going to become aware and rebel and so forth. That still seems to be more the stuff of science fiction or science fantasy.
So just closing up, how far away do you think we are from some of these sort of technological tests, whether that be the Voight-Kampff test, which is meant to sort of test our authentic humanity or inhumanity, non-humanity? How far do you think we are away from some of these developments?
Well, I mean, as I said, in terms of mapping the brain, anything that involves cognition, we can potentially create some kind of device for it. You know, and obviously the MRI scanner is part of that as well. But I think once you start getting beyond that and you talk about experience or dreams or something that seems to be uniquely human. I mean, it's interesting that both Blade Runner films sort of touch on the notion of memory and the idea that memories can actually be implanted. And in the second film, the protagonist replicant isn't sure if these memories are real. He knows he has these memories, but he's not sure if they're just prosthetic implant or if he did actually experience these things. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't be too optimistic that the world of Blade Runner, in terms of technology, is that close. On the other hand, in terms of something like climate change, mm. environmental damage and so forth, you know, that seems to be closer than ever.
We are getting towards that situation with some animals or the cyber animals of sort of an idea that there's a sort of mass extinction too. Yeah,
absolutely.
That was certainly referencing that aspect of how mass human production is leading to reduction in biodiversity.
Sure. Well, I guess the whole notion of climate change in Blade Runner was almost incidental because it was a noir film, and noir films always take place in inclement weather conditions, whereas the sequel really hit it home. It's really about the world we live in now, and it's a kind of a warning, I guess.